Hey there, and welcome to another episode of Analytics Neat. I'm your host, Bill Bruno. For those of you that might be new here, Analytics Neat is a weekly podcast. It comes out every Monday. I tend to cover media, marketing, analytics, technology, and data, and I do it in a short format to try to make it something easy for you to digest and then move on with your day. I also love interacting with all of you, so you can reach out to me directly on Twitter, at Bill Bruno, using the hashtag AnalyticsNeat. You can also give the podcast a follow, at AnalyticsNeat on Twitter as well. So if you have any ideas, topics, questions, concerns, hit me up, and I'd love to chat. And whether you're an avid listener of the podcast or you're new here and you like what you happen to be hearing, then please rate, review, and subscribe on whatever platform you prefer. If I'm not on a platform that you prefer to listen to, let me know and we'll try to figure that one out too. So I hope everybody had a fantastic weekend of wearing a damn mask. I redid a bunch of outdoor electrical work for my sister's house since the weather was nice, and we don't know how many more weekends of that we're going to get. So that was my weekend. And then riddled amongst that as well as I've been doing a lot more gaming, like of the online and PlayStation 4 variety. Playing some PGA Tour, 2K21, fantastic game. Among Us on the phone, if you guys haven't heard of that game, it's pretty funny. In essence, there's a group of 10 people, 8 of which are performing various tasks to try to beat the mission, and 2 are hidden imposters, Fall Guys, and a few others. So if you're playing something fun to pass the time, or if you're on PlayStation 4, let me know. It's been a way for me to try to pass some of the time here during the pandemic, and it's been at least a good stress relief, as I think a lot of us have that or have a need for that. And speaking of which, last week was Mental Health Awareness Week, and I think I'd be remiss if I didn't tell you that it's okay to not be okay. There's a lot of stuff going on, and it is perfectly okay to get help with that. It's not a sign of weakness. It's a sign of maturity. In the words of Game of Thrones, literally, winter is coming. And frankly, I think being locked in with this whole pandemic while the weather gets a heck of a lot worse and starts to suck is going to be real tough on folks, including myself. So, you know, hang in there. You know, get help if you need it, and please do what you need to do to maintain your sanity, because I have a feeling that as the weather turns, this whole pandemic element and being stuck in your home and not being able to go out and about and enjoy the sunshine is probably going to make things a bit worse. So definitely hang in there. So let's jump into some of the undercard topics now and lead off with the one that was probably most requested from my network and from those of you that are avid needers. And that is the fact that some news hit the wire, first reported on Forbes.com, that cloud communications business Twilio has agreed to acquire Segment for $3.2 billion. It's a lot of money. And so I'm going to walk through some of the facts, and I'm going to walk through some of my feelings around this as well. But Twilio, so what they focus on is allowing businesses to reach their customers through text messages, voice, and video calls, so on and so forth. They've built a cloud-based sort of communications infrastructure, right? And around that, you have a need for data. And Twilio has made several acquisitions in the past. Right now, they're trading at a market capitalization of over $45 billion at the moment. So $3 billion or $3.2 billion is the rumored amount for Segment. Is just a drop in the bucket for an organization of that size. But when you see that number, you have to be asking yourself, what is Segment currently valued at? The last value that they got was in April of 2019, after they raised a funding round there, and they were valued at about $1.5 billion. So that's about a year and a half ago. And Twilio is apparently acquiring it for just over 2x that. So it's an interesting trajectory when you just look at it from that perspective. I also think it's, as any technology company, you know, Segment laid off about 10% of its staff in May, and they highlighted it was in anticipation, not because of an issue, but because they saw an issue coming due to a tougher IT spending environment in the pandemic. But the company then indicated in September, so just last month, that they have over 20,000 customers, which was up from 19,000 when they made the initial layoff back in May. So they gained a 1,000 customers there in what, about 4 months' time? Now, I think that number is a bit skewed. For those of you that aren't familiar with how Segment prices, you have to keep in mind that they have a free version and a very cheap version that I think they call Teams.
before you even start to get to their quote-unquote business edition. And there's all kinds of restrictions on the free version, but it is enough to get a toe in the water, so to speak, for organizations that want to test out the solution and see what it can do. And I'm sure all of those factor into that number. So just because they gained 1,000 customers, supposedly, does not mean that all of them are paying customers. But that being said, Segment was founded back in 2012, and they were in the top 100 list of the world's leading private cloud companies. All things considered, it's a great win for Segment, obviously. That's a heck of a lot of money for their application. I think from a marketplace perspective, anyone involved in the CDP market has to be looking at this and going, wow, like this is getting real. Because from my perspective, I've worked with Segment many times. I've had customers using Segment in my prior life. And I personally think Segment's really only a fun solution if you love to code custom elements and tinker and play hero, because it's not all that great in reality, you know, to use. It's not a very usable solution. It's definitely not something that the business can feel comfortable with. It gets really complicated really fast as you're trying to leverage the Segment APIs and the Segment quote-unquote data capture capabilities, and almost trying to normalize all of your capture technologies or anything you're using for data on the same data model before you bring it together. So you end up maintaining the solution in several steps, you know, starting with the customer facing on the browser side, and then all of the bells and whistles and or duct tape and glue that you use along the way to bring that data together. I think it makes sense to an extent for Twilio, because they can now try to use the APIs and the offerings of Segment to bring even more data into their platform to then use that for activation and better context and timing in the messages, so on and so forth. It's not Twilio's first API acquisition. They made one a while back, and that API company also made quite a nice penny because the stock price of Twilio skyrocketed after they did so. Overall, I think there's a lot of overhaul needed to make Segment easy to use, because my experiences with it, for lack of a better word, were shameful. I even had a former client in my past life say that they only had Segment because one person made the decision, and they couldn't wait for that one person to find a new job so that they could rip it out and try to do something simpler that was easier to maintain and easier to make sense of. But for someone like Segment, when you have those challenges, how great is it to go into an organization that kind of offers the cloud infrastructure, the activation, and everything around it? So if Segment just becomes part of their offering, I think you can hide some of the lack of features and hide some of the complexities and try to make it a nice buttoned-up offering for those that are using Twilio. But overall, I think my biggest concern with Segment is their data capture in terms of bringing data in from digital channels was just absolute garbage. And I think from that perspective, there's a lot that has to be done to try to make the digital channel more actionable for Twilio. And I'm sure they've uncovered this, and I'm sure they've got a plan for it. But for me, I was shocked. I mean, that's a massive dollar amount for a solution that, in my opinion, needs some work to be actually usable across several verticals from a business perspective. Keeping the conversation in the CDP landscape, I thought it'd be fun to just walk through something I stumbled upon. Dun & Bradstreet has put something out that they're calling Data-Inspired Guide to B2B Sales and Marketing. And it's focused around how to select a CDP if you are a B2B organization. And in essence, they've generated 12 questions to ask vendors. I figured I'd rattle those off and give you some thoughts on that. So I'm going to start with the questions here. The first one was, does your solution ingest data from any data source? Does it create a 360-degree view of the customer? Does it capture raw data? Does it map individuals to buying centers, companies, and corporate hierarchies? Ding, ding, ding. I'll come back to that one. Does it enable audience activation across any and all channels? Does it have flexible AI and deep insights? Does it offer deep integration with the sales channel? Is it independent? Does your solution store data indefinitely? Does it provide the ability to clean your data and add new records? How flexible are your capabilities? Will the ever-increasing laws and regulations, e.g. GDPR, how are you ensuring compliance based upon that? So those are 12 unbelievably generic questions. In my opinion, I think it's really interesting when you get into the B2B sector, and I've danced around in it a bit, and we're in some sales processes now in my professional life on this. It is a struggle for B2B because they don't care about the individual. So you're talking about a customer data platform, but the customer to them is a business. So there's a change there that you need to have that's kind of highlighted in the buying centers, companies, and corporate hierarchies question. And you know, I think in that regard, that's the main thing. It's the most important thing to B2B is around leads, It's really all that matters, and it's about understanding who that person is relative to their business and then linking that to the CRM records to determine whether or not it's an existing customer, a target, or someone perhaps where they lost business and they want to try to bring them back in. And a lot of these other ones, though, are so vague. Can you store your data indefinitely, as an example? Does it matter? I think this is where the definition of customer data platform starts to become really murky, right? A customer data platform should be bringing data together, your first-party data, perhaps some second-party data, maybe even some third-party syncing as well where it applies. But to say, does it store it indefinitely? I mean, that's what a data warehouse is for. That's what master data management is for. There's a lot of things that are getting convoluted in the customer data platform conversation that make it really difficult to design an RFP. And I think overall, that's a main issue with RFPs in the first place. They're not great. They're not very well tailored. And the way that they go through a weeding out process tends to be far too flawed. A lot of these questions, if I was handed these as a vendor, I could come up with phenomenal answers to all of these that on the surface, if you bought into that, would be fantastic, and it would tick the box and it would move you to the next round. Things like, does it have flexible AI and deep insights? What does that even mean? What are you looking for? I think instead, for B2B, it needs to be around predictive and deterministic capabilities and how you can use various inputs about an individual and perhaps augment with other systems that the B2B organization might already have, where you can try to reconcile within a reasonable layer of confidence who this person is or who this organization is. I think the ability to recall that information when somebody comes back from an anonymous perspective, they're not logged in or anything along those lines. How can you, if you've identified them previously deterministic or probabilistically, how do you recall that? I think the independence question is interesting as well, because it really isn't about independence. It shouldn't matter whether someone owns the platform, whether it's part of a larger stack or not. What really should matter is how open the platform is. And I think open is something that can mean a million different things too. So you really do need to drill into that. So overall, I think it's great that Dun & Bradstreet is trying to offer a B2B guide, but I don't think enough time and effort went into really thinking through what this needs to look like and how you set apart different solutions and how you define CDP. Now, they did use the definition from the CDP Institute, which I think is a fantastic definition, but I think you lose a little bit in how these questions were structured and missing a lot of the B2B nuances out there. So the final topic for this week's undercard is the Stackie Awards. Have you ever heard of those? Be honest with you, I did not know they existed. Shame on me. But it's from chiefmartech.com, same place where you get the Marketecture massive design with the thousands and thousands of technology vendors broken out by category. And apparently this is usually presented at the Martech conference. I've been to that conference a few times out in San Francisco. And it was a while back though. So maybe these were going on back then. Maybe they weren't. I honestly don't know. But the event was done virtually this year. And so as a result, they couldn't have the award show, just like you would suspect every other conference. And apparently the goal of the Stackie Awards was quite cool. It was to provide a visual representation of your tech stack. And some of the companies, as I was digging through this, put together some wild and albeit very headache inducing in some cases, diagrams. I loved one that was a periodic table, and I thought I'd just list the winners here as an FYI, but if you put this as a quick search into the Google machine for the 2020 Stackie Awards, that's Stackie with an IE, you'll get brought right to the Chief Martech blog for it, and you can look at all of the responses. You can look at the winners as well, which included Coffee Talks, Echo 360, New England Biolabs, NextThink, Philips, PitchBook, Poly, Puppet, SAS, and the USPS. Take a look at that. Check it out. I'd welcome your thoughts there. One thing that came from this from my perspective, though, is that some of these organizations are using a lot of repetitive technologies, and there's probably some things to simplify, but it really is a cool view into everything from analytics to production to video to web design to web content, so on and so forth. And it's an interesting retrospective into what all of these organizations are doing with some fun visuals around it to really bring them to life. So give that a look if you haven't yet. So that'll wrap up this week's undercard. We'll go ahead and jump into the main event. It's a relatively quick one, but a heck of a headline. There was a Gartner survey that was published last week, and it's the Gartner Marketing Data and Analytics Survey of 2020. And in that, they revealed that as a result, only 54% of marketing decisions are being influenced by marketing analytics. So the table that comes with this, and I'm going to dig further into this survey and pull out some other things that are of interest probably for next week, but the headline grabber is a table with the title that says marketing analytics hasn't had the influence that leaders expected. And from a senior perspective and a mid-level perspective, they show the percentage respondents. From a senior level perspective, 54% of the senior folks agreed and said that it has not had an expected influence. 19% was neutral, and 27% said that it has had the expected influence. So when you factor in the neutrals, that means 73% of senior level management don't think that analytics is delivering on the promise of itself. When you look from a mid-level perspective, it's almost half and half. 45% said that it has had an expected influence, 37% said it's not, and 19% was neutral, right? So you've got about 55% on the negative or neutral and 45% on the positive. And I think at first glance, the first thing that comes to mind when I look at this table is the disconnect between what senior level expectations are for analytics and what mid-level individual folks within organizations might be doing or might be viewing as success. And I think this is where the difference between reporting, dashboards, and PowerPoints differ from value, action, and activation. And I think that disconnect needs to be brought together by the CMOs and the CIOs of organizations to truly define what analytics is supposed to do and how it's supposed to live. It can't just be a bunch of pretty charts and some hypotheses. There needs to be real action. There needs to be machine learning and natural language processing. There has to be data science, because you have to have science around all of this. And I think in general, you know, from my perspective, it's the technology limitations that we talk to on a weekly basis as well, particularly in the world now where the browsers are starting to shut down a lot of third-party capability. In the report from Gartner, Gartner outlines that marketers also cite poor data quality, inactionable results, and the lack of clear recommendations as top reasons for not relying on marketing analytics to make decisions. So again, that disconnect and that disparity is there that I just highlighted. Poor data quality is a given. It's because they're using solutions that don't know how to do great data quality. And they're too tagging focused, and they're too data layer focused, and too many things can go wrong. I just had a client last week, had their technology team update something on the website, and it broke all of their data collection, and they had no idea, right? These things happen, it's fragile. Inactionable results, I think, is the lack of science there and the lack of partnership between marketing and data science. Lack of clear recommendations. I think this is where some of the expectations change too, because what is a recommendation? Is a recommendation highlighting a problem, or is a recommendation outlining a solution? Because sometimes the solution is not as clear as the problem, and sometimes you need to apply science in a creative way. You need to apply cross-channel decisioning. You need to apply A/B multivariate tests, so on and so forth. And I think the thing that's most concerning is that according to the Gartner CMO spend survey, even the most recent one, the top area of investment and the investment that's planning to be increased year on year is marketing analytics, yet over basically 73% of senior level people don't think that they're getting what they need from analytics, but they're going to keep throwing money at the problem. And on the flip side, the mid-level folks are still doing what they're doing because it's a coin flip to them, 50-50. And I think, again, you need some definition around this. If you're going to put the money in, you have to be getting value out. And I think this is about skilling up your team. I think this is about changing the dialogue. I think it's about restructuring. I think Gartner highlighted two areas that came forward that require the most investment to kind of shore up or make up ground is data science and campaign analysis. And I think that makes sense. Campaign analysis for most organizations has been reliant on third-party data. They're not doing attribution in the right way in most organizations. So that's really no surprise. And I think from a data science perspective, we've already talked about those disconnects and some of the need for data science and how that fits with marketing analytics in a recent episode in the archives of Analytics Neat. So I think, you know, this is where the investment needs to be. It needs to be in re-identifying and re-securing what success means, how analytics and marketing data is supposed to funnel into that, and reset the expectations across the enterprise. And it also requires a rethinking of the technology stack. And I think, you know, this really was brought to life in the undercard. If you go look at some of the stack awards, it's just how many technologies are sitting out there. And each one of those technologies has a data silo of some kind sitting somewhere. And someone's trying to bring all of those together and make sense of them from a scientific perspective. And they're not generating results because it's a headache. So I think everything needs to be re-looked at. And I think if that doesn't get right-sized, and if organizations don't start making the next step in maturity, I think you will see a right-sizing of the industry as well, to where the spending might not grow in some organizations. They might hold it steady until they determine a better path and they figure out how to get around the poor data quality, the inactionable results, and the lack of clear recommendations. But with that, we'll go ahead and put a bow on this week's episode of Analytics Neat. Thank you again so much for listening. Please recommend this to your friends. Please subscribe on your favorite podcast platform. The subscriptions make all the difference in the world of getting the podcast out there. And if you have time to leave a review, please do. I'm getting a lot of content suggestions from a lot of people, some of which I've only met because of their content suggestions. And I love meeting neaters out there, and I love all the content. So please keep requesting topics, keep sending stuff my way to take a look at. Stay safe, wear a damn mask, and I'll see you next Monday, folks.